Hi, it's Jim Bakiai. Podcast is Be You, the World Will Adjust. Hope everybody is doing well, freezing wherever you are, or sweating wherever you are. But wherever you are, I hope you're enjoying yourselves, surviving as best as you can. And so, you know, I was watching the Super Bowl last weekend, probably like the other 200 million people or whatever. And what was of particular interest to me was not actually the Super Bowl, but there were some pregame shows. And one of them had an interesting story on Andy Reid, who's the coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. It talked about how open-minded Andy was when it comes to creating plays, and that many of his players are encouraged, if not expected, to think about plays they think might work. So I thought, what an interesting idea that the coach of the team is encouraging people. And then the story went on to say, which I found kind of amusing, but in telling of what Andy Reid is like, that the first time this happened to him was when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. And he had a cleaner who used to clean his office. And the cleaner used to say to him all the time, he says, you know, I got a great play for you, Mr. Reid, to run. He said, I got a great play. And Andy Reid said, yeah, sure. I bet you do. Just like imagine how most people, right? And sometimes, whether it's your kids or coworker or someone, say, hey, I got a great idea. Yeah. I hear you. But anyway, so this guy was persistent, right? Just kept badgering him. No, I got a great play. I've been working on it. I've been looking at it. It's a great play. You should use it. So finally, Andy Reid, just to get the guy off his back, says to him, why don't you put it down on a piece of paper for me? So the guy puts it down on a piece of paper for him, and he comes in and he lays it on his desk, and Andy Reid looks at it. And he goes, wow, this is kind of interesting. He says, so then he takes it back to his coaches, and his coaches look at it. And Andy Reid doesn't tell them that it comes from the janitor. He says, and they say it's kind of interesting. And so he says, okay, we're going to run it as the first play in one of the games. And so they run it as the first play in one of the games, and they score a touchdown. And this guy's at home watching it going, that's my play. You can imagine everybody else in this family go, what are you talking? So I gave him that play. And they're going, oh, sure, you gave him that play. And Andy Reid said, after that point, he has had an open door policy, not as in the physical door, but an open door policy mentally. He still reserves the right to have 51% voting rights on the decisions, but it sort of highlights the fact that what I always talk about is we just never know where it's going to come from. So if you're in management, where are your ideas coming from? Are you trying to come up with them all yourself? Or are you creating an environment, fostering an environment where people can see what's wrong and are encouraged to come forward, and as opposed to putting the same four lug nuts in the wheel on the GM plant floor, not that that's not a noble profession, but instead of just doing the same thing, asking themselves the question, it's got to be a better way to do this, right? Or here's another idea, or here's something. And I was with my nephew and his bride-to-be this morning. And, you know, one of the things I said to her, we were talking, it was the first time I met her, but I was saying to her, you know, in a million years, I could never have thought that I would have written two books. In 2 million years, I never thought I would have a podcast. And right off the spectrum of another galaxy, I could never imagine that I was actually going to be sending in an application for TED Talks, and that I'm actually thinking about creating a masterclass series, not for masterclass, but to give you an idea. And I said to her, it just came from constantly pushing the edge of creativity and saying, why not? But it was just like, yeah, why not? Why not? Why not? And it's the same thing about asking people to be creative. Why not? So I remember when I was at Wood Gundy, and we used to have a policy in the fixed income department. And I used to say to people, I believe there are more good ideas out in this training room. There were like 500 people in the trading room than I could possibly ever come up with. So I committed that I will try every single idea that is brought to me, and to the degree which I'll get behind it will be kind of like how good I feel about it. But I'll try every one, because I had a fundamental belief that I couldn't pick the winners from the losers. But if I did enough of them, hopefully I'd have more winners than losers. And we used to sell bonds to retail brokers, and they used to get skinned all the time. And they were sort of, it would be a situation where someone would say, "Who's that for?" And they'd say, "Oh, it's for retail." And they say, "Oh yeah, take an extra 10 points off," type of thing, right? It was a horrendous way to treat people, but it sort of was borne out for many years of bad behavior and everything else. I had a fantastic young woman that worked for me, Laura McGregor. And she showed up at my desk one day and she said, "I don't know if you realize this, but 42% of our business is with retail brokers. And I think we can do better business and more business and build greater relationships, turn our inventory over, yada, 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 yada." Like, it was all brilliant. But she was just this young person on the desk that saw that we weren't doing something very well. And I said, "Okay, what do you need?" And she said, "You know, like, I need 3 or 4 people. I need a small traveling budget. I want to go across the country," and everything else. Anyways, killed it. We had the first retail bond desk, like a real retail bond desk of anybody in the country. And where the brokers actually felt someone was covering them, cared about them, generated ideas, and the volume of business and turnover that went on was just like, I think we ended up, not that anybody can check, but I think we can end up, I think we ended up like 57% of our business came from that segment of the business, up from 37 or 42%. Massive, massive success. I would have never come up with it. Most of the people that I worked with that historically had biases towards that section of business would never have come up with it. And I knew I was onto something. I knew I was onto something that I couldn't possibly know more than everybody else. And I knew I was onto something that I had to, you know, the other thing is I had to keep pushing people to give me ideas. I had to push them to keep stuff coming. And I thought, well, why don't people do that? Is it because maybe as they've been brought up, maybe as they've been educated, that part of their personal creativity has been suppressed? Is that because people have said, "What do you know? Like, seriously, like, who are you to suggest to Mr. CEO or Mr. Boss, like, how things should be better?" Or the fear, you know, and this one I get all the time, right, is what if they're not interested? And you say, well, then you'll find out they're not interested. If they're not interested, maybe the future of that company or that division or that area is not as promising as you perhaps thought about it. So I wanted to focus, because I've been doing a lot of work with clients on cultural change and how to create cultural change. And out of cultural change, you have to think about who are the people that are going to creatively grab something and sort of fix it, right? And one of the things that I've realized in talking to a lot of people and looking back over history is you can't create big change all at once in an organization. They all have to be little brush fires. They all have to be little pilot projects, right? Figure out what is the process or what is it that we do that creates the most amount of pain and the most amount of angst for the most amount of people. And whether that's a new product development plan or, you know, a new business authorization plan, figure out the one that is the biggest pain in the ass for the most amount of people. And once you've identified that one, take the people running that process completely out of the play and grab the people that are actually doing it on a day-to-day basis. Figuratively, not physically, put them aside and say, there has to be a better way to do this. Think about this like, here's a production model. Here's an operating model under which we have worked on and we have done it this way forever. I want you to come up with a new operating model. And I want you to come up with it with no strings attached. And I want you to think about it in several ways. I want you to think about it redesigning it. I want you to think about it as somebody else doing it out there. And it's much easier to just go buy that new operating model. And then lastly, if you don't have the people to be able to redesign it, where can you find others that have done it that you can learn from? Because I think sometimes what happens in these spurts of creativity and desire to make things better and more efficient is that people get singular in their focus. They sort of, okay, how can we fix what we're doing here? And in absence of broader knowledge, which was, why bother, right? It's kind of like buying a house and you go in and you think, well, we got to fix this, it's going to cost this. And then somebody goes, hang on a second, let me just tear the whole thing down, right? Why don't we just tear it down and we'll build a new one? Or I'm not going to tear it down, I'm not going to build a new one, I'm going to buy one that somebody else has already done. And it's that same sort of mentality, different horses for different courses, but that sort of breadth of thinking about creativity. And I know I sound like a broken record on this, but the truth of creativity, the truth of how to change an organization is in the people doing the jobs. If you want to know how to improve a production line, ask the people on the production line, what's a waste of time for them that they're doing? If you want to improve how someone has an operating model, you want to improve any aspect of life, ask someone. The other thing that I thought was really, really interesting was at the end of the Super Bowl, they handed the trophy over to the owner. And the owner, he brought Tom Brady from New England to Tampa. And the owner said, you know, the guy said, congratulations, what a brilliant move. And he says, you know, my father used to say, if you don't know where you're going, find someone who's been there before to teach you how to get there. And that term really sort of struck me, because here's a guy that went out and got undeniably the best quarterback in the history of the NFL, not only just got him, but got other wide receivers, everybody else, and let him lead the team, right? And so my message out of that is, when you bring people into an organization with a purpose and a desire to have them change things up, to do things differently, let them do it. Don't bring them in and then say, oh boy, that's not how we do it here, you know, or don't say, stay in your lane, we don't need your help, you know, or don't say, I don't really know why they hired you. Like, we like being in ninth place or 10th place, right? And the importance of finding those people to bring into an organization, or even finding those people within the organization. Let them rise up, let them be creative, and then support them. Give them what they need to be successful. Don't sort of bring them in and sort of go, okay, yeah, nothing else. And the guy goes, well, I need this. And yeah, well, I already paid a lot for you. Can't afford to pay anything else. Like, we got you the car. Wheels may come later, but we got you the car. And so, you know, you should be thankful. It's a very good car. No wheels, yeah, but it's a very good car. Bringing people in, people looking for people. And it's important for you as an individual that if you're being brought into an institution to test the waters, right? How are they at organ rejection? How many new people are there? And what's the percentage of new people that have gone in that have been spit out, right? You need to understand that. You need to understand that you yourself, Tom Brady alone, could not have won the Super Bowl for them. Not possible. But when they built the defense, they built the offense, they built all of these other aspects to it, the combined piece of that with his leadership is what they got them to the end of the line, which is, you know, making him win more Super Bowls than any other team in history. The GOAT, as they call him, rises again. But I thought it was really interesting that the owner of the team, you know, sort of talked about his dad and why his commentary. And you know, oftentimes when I talk to people about my podcast, and, you know, Katie and I talk about this a bunch of times as well, you know, people say, like, how do you figure out what you're going to say, what you're going to do? And I feel a bit like Jerry Seinfeld, you know, the television program. Jerry would say, you know, it's about nothing, but it's not about nothing. It's about day-to-day stuff that people gloss over. And, you know, so much of our life is spent in superlatives and talking about things. And so when I say to people in my coaching practice, I coach people to improve their strengths and be damned with their weaknesses. They go, oh yeah, that's exactly it. That's what it should be. And I sort of then say, well, but do you do that? Well, no, no, but you can't really do that. And I said, well, but how do you know? And they said, well, that's just poppycock. That's just a dream. Like, nobody gets a job like that. And I go, yeah, I can show you a lot of people that I said, I am. I get paid to be me. And 50 years of my life, I tried not to be me. I tried to be somebody else. And then when I finally embraced myself, the challenge was not finding me anymore, was finding people that wanted to listen to me, finding people that were interested in what I had to say, finding people that would pay me for my ideas and my experience and everything else. And even to this day, I mean, I send off emails to people, they don't respond, that's fine, they do respond, but I'm looking for those people. You know, we have inspiration all around us, and we have to harness it, right? Like I said, everybody's got good instincts. Everybody has creativity. I really believe that. You know, people say to me, oh, I don't know about everybody having good instincts. I said, they do. Instincts are born out of our feeling in the world and our experiences. And you may have bad instincts, but at least you're consistent in your bad instincts. You know, you just need some consistency one way or the other. But we all have good instincts. And there's nothing better than being wrong and having trusted your instincts than being wrong when you didn't trust your instincts. And then you say to yourself, damn it, I knew that was going to happen like that. So I'd rather be wrong trusting my instincts than be wrong not trusting my instincts. So we started, myself and a bunch of guys, we started a couple of companies. One was called BayStreetDirect.com, which was an online IPO business in the early 2000s. It was brilliant. It really was. But it was 15 years ahead of its time. And then we started another one called Matchu. It was actually Nakudo first, which was Japanese for matchmaker. It was an online recruiting system. But again, it was too early. And if you think about these things, I mean, timing has such an impact. Think about Zoom. Pre-pandemic, that company's lying on its back and not going anywhere. Think about all the Bitcoin miners and everyone else who are basically broke when Bitcoin was at 6,000. One event transpires, and the next thing you know, boom, 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 right? Zoom's off the track, Microsoft Teams, everything else. My brother-in-law, Tim, worked for a video conferencing company 10 years ago, way ahead of its time, and it was outstanding, but there was no market for it. People were still on phone and still on face-to-face. So don't get discouraged if your creativity doesn't land in the right window. Priceline.com went bankrupt the first time that it went around. Whole Foods was a disaster at the beginning. Great ideas don't necessarily fail because they're not great ideas. Sometimes they fail because their timeliness is not good. And as I've said before, too early, too late, same graveyard. So what do I want you to do this week? I want you to open up your creativity. If you are in management, I want you to turn to your people and I want you to say, I want 5 ideas from each of you on what we should stop doing, what we should start doing better, and what we should do that we've never done before. And I want you to think with no limitations whatsoever. And if you're on the other side of the coin, I want you to ask those 3 questions and I want you to hand them into your boss, unsolicited. Just say, hey, that whack job, Jim Bakiai, came up with this idea, this podcast that I have. I think there's a better way we can do what we're doing that's faster, more efficient, cheaper, make us more money, be better socially conscious, whatever the one that makes you feel good. But just take a moment, open up your creativity, let it flow, let yourself go. And because I know it's there. I see it in everybody that I meet. I see it in everybody that I coach. I ask them a question. I just say something simple. Well, how would you do it differently? And they never go, I don't know. They all know. It's right on the tip of their tongues. So if they all know, then the challenge for both individual and company is how do we get it out? So take a deep breath and let your creativity flow. Jim Bakiai, podcast is BU. Enjoy your week and I'll see you soon.